Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudely Wickle Ashby. Today, I am super excited to be having a conversation with
Mrs. Gertrude Oforuwa Fefame from Ghana.
I'm really thrilled to be chatting with her and to welcome her to the Vision Studio. Welcome, Gertrude.
Thank you, Delia. I'm so excited as well, and I have no words to express how thankful I am to you for having this opportunity together. I love this.
Well, thank you very much. And I know you prefer to be called Getty, and we have several passions we share. And one of them is disability issues. So I'm going to start by asking you to just share a bit about yourself.
Thank you, Delia. So yes, I keep to Getty because it's simple and short and make it easier for people to remember. I started experiencing vision loss at age 10 when I could not read from the board in school. And immediately, medical attention was sought. I started using reading glasses up to age 14 when the ophthalmologist and optician together said there was nothing more they could have for me. Well, I didn't leave school completely as such, though there were times of breaks still for eye treatment here and there, but I continued in what I called an informal, inclusive education setting, because at that time, Ghana didn't have a good inclusive policy program. In fact, they didn't know much about inclusive education. So I went through my secondary school, not reading from the board, not reading from textbooks. I could only deal with my own handwriting and large prints, but with some teachers who were supportive and some friends as well. I did a 5-year course, got some credits, some passes, and some failures that I'm so proud of. And that's how I continued into the rest of life. So at age 17, I was advised to go to the school for the blind so that I can learn how to read and write Braille and also typing. So I went to the school to do that. And that brought me in touch with a lady who became a friend and a sister for many years until she passed on. She was totally blind at the time I met her. She has also completed secondary school and has enrolled in a teacher's training college in my own home town and the town in which we have the first school for the blind in Ghana. Meeting her was very important to me because then I could see somebody who is totally blind, who is making life meaningful and who understood blindness and could be a peer, a friend, a mentor, a sister, and all that it takes. And that is where my love and inspiration also to give back to society started. And this far back in 1975, September, I would say. Yes.
Wonderful. That is indeed an inspiring story because we all do need role models, someone to mentor and work with us that we too can grow and improve as well. Right. So Getty, you would have shared how, you know, losing your vision has shaped your life, how your mentor would have also inspired you to do more, to give back and to really strive. Now, how do you really balance your professional life and the natural daily tasks of living with vision loss?
Thank you. For me, it's a mixed and the same. I don't think over the years I've been able to separate me, myself, my family, my work, my leisure, my fatigue, my whatever. I don't think I separate them. So from the point of where I was coming from, one part of which I didn't mention a few minutes ago, was an encounter I had with some distant relatives of mine that made me so miserable just the week in which I met Grace, my friend. They met me outside the compound of the school and inquired why I was around there. And while I mentioned that I have enrolled at a school for the blind, their reaction was like the world has come to an end. So it's like, oh my Lord, we were hoping so much of you and from you. Has it become so bad? Yes, we knew you had an eye condition, but we didn't blur on and on. And it was very devastating for me. Because for me, as a low vision person at that time, I hadn't seen any difference between the week I had entered the school and the day they were talking about. Because my condition had been progressive, but very slow. And so to behave as if the fact that I have enrolled at a school for the blind has brought everything in my life to an end, I thought then it was as good as even ending my life. I wonder what ending of life meant at the time to me, but it only explains how bad that reaction was to me. In the midst of the confusion is when I met this peer friend of mine. And so I moved straight into valuing how mentorship, role modeling, friendship, networking means to enable one to understand oneself. Although there were variations, I was a low vision person, he was totally blind. And so our friendship was valuable to each other. I was an assistant, a guide in so many of our movements. But she introduced me to the organization of and for blind persons. And so as a volunteer for many years before I became a professional teacher, became a specialist teacher for visually impaired children, did my degree. You can imagine that my work and my life and my home have been the same. My children, my husband, everybody got involved. Friends, family, even when I was in school. And that is why it's difficult to differentiate. Except that workplaces will allow me to or demand me certain objectives and report on them. But after school or after work is the same for me as before work. So whether you call me at 8 a.m. or you want something from me at 8 p.m., my response will be largely the same, giving the best of my ability to others, unless I'm extremely tired or unwell or already occupied. Still, I use every bit of it for awareness raising. So my children are involved in awareness around disability. None of them has a disability. I mean, that's how my life is like.
Right. And just now you mentioned that your distant cousins were all devastated when they recognized that you have low vision and enrolled at the school for the blind. Now, as an adult and a professional, how has your immediate family, like your husband, children, siblings, provided that level of support that all of us require and need?
They've been wonderful right from day one, and it has never changed. It continues improving and increasing every day. Never have I felt dejected by any family member or disrespected in any way. So when it was a time when they needed to play with me or cry with me, read and make my books onto the tape recorder those many years back, or assist me today in my office work and travels. So my husband got into the family where everybody was supportive and he just joined. My children came into the family where daddy, aunties, uncles were all supportive and they just joined. My little daughter started reading children's book when she was at the university. The reason being that she used my faxes to learn how to read. She didn't use the children's book to read because she's already came to meet Mami, who was a leader at the Ghana Association of the Blind, was the vice president at the Africa Union of the Blind, was the vice chair women's committee of the World Blind Union, and faxes and emails were dropping from all over the wherever, and it needed to be read to me. So it wasn't today that we have computer access. Everything was hard print. And so she'll spell and I'll mention the difficult words, and that's how she learned to read. And I'm the leader of the family, and they have never remembered or taken notice that I am blind and therefore I don't have to be the leader or at church or in the community. Yes, that's the experience I'm enjoying. God be my helper and add that.
Wonderful. So Getty, in 1981, the world commemorated the International Year of the Disabled. How do you think society's perception of persons with disabilities have changed over the last 40 plus years?
Thank you for this important question, another good one. Yes, so there has been reasonable improvement, I would say. Just that maybe on one part, I may say that it's a bit slower than we would have wished, but it's great. So we had the standard rules, the UN standard rules on equalization of opportunities that brought some enlightenment and some awareness, and that brought some results that moved on to the United Nations Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities. In between was one great achievement, the development of organizations of and for persons with disabilities in many countries, including my own. And that has been a force, a pressure that has continued to raise awareness, demand accountability, mentor persons with disabilities and the organizations, and move towards the implementation and monitoring of national, regional, and the global conventions and the issues. So life is changing. National policies are available. Inclusive education policies are available in many countries, not implemented the way we want, but it's a reference point and some work is going on. Attitudes are changing. The stigma is not as bad as it used to be. And I'll cite an example. It was very common 30 years back in Ghana, as an example, where we have a lot of private commercial vehicles with a conductor. We don't use tickets, we use cash. And so when you are getting closer to your destination, they go around and collect the money, your lorry fare. And it was quite common those days for a conductor to say an awful thing like, blind person, bring your money. And I mentioned this story at a workshop of a gathering of persons with visual impairment. Quite a number has heard it before too. But coming forward, you don't hear that again. In our community, every elderly female is an auntie or a madam, and every elderly male is an uncle or sir. Today, and this has also been heard by many others, we hear more about, auntie, please bring your money, or madam, it's your turn to bring your money. No more blind person. And it's due to the awareness raising, the education, and the changes that all that we are doing together, including this vision radio interview we are doing, the influence and impact it's having on society. We can only do more and also get the generation coming to do more than we have been able to do the years back. And I am very optimistic that the years ahead will be faster than the time we had before now, because there's more interventions taking place. At the UN level, for instance, We are no longer limiting interventions with the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability. We are now infiltrating into disability in the Convention on the Rights of the Child, disability in the Convention on Elimination Against Discrimination of Women, the infiltration around torture, migration, name them. So very soon, many more of the entities looking for implementation on the rights of persons in general are going to talk about the rights of persons with disabilities as part of a mainstream approach. Just remember the Sustainable Development Goals. Just remember the Pact for the Future and all the things that came last year and the disability component that came with it and all the advocacy and the policy change that is going on. It's going to be better. We don't have to relent. Even though it is slow, we have to be better motivated at sea.
Well said, Gethi, well said. Now, you have a very powerful voice as a global leader. You know, you're representing and serving millions of people with disabilities around the world. Can you share your perspective of how you think you, as a woman with a vision impairment, have impacted and influenced innovation and positive change?
Thank you. Interestingly enough, I get positive comments, not only from persons with visual impairment, persons with disabilities, but persons without disability who walked to me and said, "You have inspired me," or "You have inspired us." We're a group of people. And I think it's more about humility and understanding that you may be a leader, but you are the servant of the group. And the understanding that you cannot do it alone, so you have to do it with others. You have to recognize the role that every Tom, Dick, and Harry plays at every corner of the world. And so to use one's own life and humility as an example, to write in terms of articles or blogs, to give radio awareness or television or any opportunity in the pulpits, in sermons, everywhere, to bring the attention that first of all, we are all equal and there is nobody who wouldn't have a limitation of a sort. It might not be disability, it might be something else, but the disability doesn't make anybody a less a person. And this is something I preach every day. Disability doesn't make anyone less a person. And once everybody understands that you may have a disability, but it doesn't make you less a person. And the rest are in your hands, and the people around you, you convince them to come along with you, you're already a win. I've also learned and continue to teach that do not worry too much about those who will not seem to appreciate and get along with you. Because I learned the bitter experience I've just mentioned about meeting some distant relatives who almost frustrated me for the rest of my life. No one should allow this to happen. Concentrate on the few, if there are, or many, if there are, who respect, understand, come along with you, and shine wherever you are. Don't leave it for the very few ones who are up there. Everybody has a role to play. And every role is as important as whoever calls him or herself a leader. So I just live my life every day, try to respect others, try to recognize others, give up my best. And it tells a story as disability will tell. It tells a story as Christianity will tell. It tells a story as a wife will tell. It tells a story as motherhood will tell. It tells a story as a neighbor will tell. And wherever you are, you can pick yours and roll it over and make it big in your own way. That's what I would say.
Okay, Now, in your experience as a global leader, you chair the UN Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. You were very involved with the World Blind Union and the International Council on the Education of Blind and Visually Impaired Persons. I have that correct?
Yes, you have it correct, but you
Right.
don't have the correct of the chairship of the CRPD. In my humility and in my love to share, I stepped down from the chairship of the Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities on the 3rd of March, so that another person could also come and help with the work and bring in more ideas when I support from where I sit. So I'm now the immediate past chair, no longer the chair. Thank
Okay. Right. Well, that doesn't take away from the excellent work that you have done as the chair and serving on so many committees around the world. What do you think are some of the support systems, innovations that are needed to help persons with disabilities to thrive in the education and work settings?
Right. The working and doing away of discrimination and stigma and the lack of confidence in others, what people with disabilities could offer and could do. Our lighting more around education, education in terms of schooling. And I want to wear my hat of the global president of International Council on Education of People with Visual Impairment, where we promote inclusive education for all, particularly for learners with visual impairment. Teachers mistakenly think that the stereotyping of segregating learners with visual impairment is the best way to go. And I will encourage them that although it is understandable that they might need a bit more awareness and probably some support from specialized teachers, they have the capacity, if they are willing, to satisfy the needs of all children, including children with visual impairment, in a standard classroom. Instead of doing a group education or learning and teaching, if they tried to assess and do individual planning, which is possible, they will be able to give the support that the children require. And then they will be able to identify the extra supports, the specialized support that any child might require clearly. And therefore, the specialized teacher who might be found in a resource center may not have to do too much because the class teacher can straight away recommend what the child requires from the child's individual plan. So, the negative attitude that children with visual impairment don't belong to the mainstream class is what needs to change. And the motivation and self-awareness of the teachers that we can do better by the mainstream teachers is what is required. And he wrote the ableism that makes them straight away think that children with disabilities, and so for that matter, those with visual impairment or any multiple disability are not good enough, need to stop. With these and mentorship and empowerment of the children with visual impairment and their families, what support they can give at home, the confidence that the parents need to have in their children, and the state support in terms of financing inclusive education, we are good to go. And there are results being shown around. I have been successful even in an informal and irregular inclusive education program in my secondary school. Why would it not be successful for a formal inclusive education program anywhere in the world? It is possible. Thank you.
And what about the area of employment, decent work
Sure, very similar and very important as well. For it to be better worked on, that is why at the Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, I was privileged to be elected to be the chair of the working group that elaborated the article and work on employment on the Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities, how states and non-state allies should implement that article. So I would encourage all to use the general comments of the Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. There are eight of them now. There is one on employment, there is on education, on women, on deinstitutionalization, on independent living. Count them. You know what? Erroneously, in the same ableism stance, that because you have a disability, you cannot perform. Because you have a disability, your requirements are expensive. Because you have a disability, you know, those erroneous impressions have to be eroded away. And the International Labour Organization is doing their best and working with the CRPD committee and working with states and working with state actors, such as my organization, the Sight Savers, where I work, and even my umbrella, national umbrella organization in Ghana, the Ghana Federation Disability Organization. We all have work practices. So, you know, in most cases, the organizations often for persons with disabilities demonstrate programs for states to know that the erroneous impressions needs to change. And that's why there are a couple of employment programs around the globe demonstrating that people with disabilities, including those with visual impairment, can perform. I was employed as a middle cadre of Sight Savers. I'm now a senior officer. It's not because Sight Savers is interested or focusing on disability that if I don't perform, I'll be kept there or be promoted on gratis. No. But with the right environment, with the support services, with the acceptance and recognition, everyone can perform. And this is what we are encouraging employers, including private sector employers, not to continue to think that the provisions that, or the adaptations, or the adjustments, or the reasonable accommodation that persons with disabilities require in order to fulfill their role as employees are too expensive. Without them, the society is losing out, the company is losing out. Now, encourage them. There are statistics that shows that when you have a reasonable number or according to your rules and you give the right support, you rather enrich the whole community of employees instead of leaving them out, or even sometimes so sad that people will pay persons with disabilities without even giving them the work because they think it's social responsibility. No, we want to work and work as any other person, employed, career growth, paid leave, and not sheltered workshops. Sheltered workshop is not at the open job market. In most cases, persons with disabilities in this environment are not receiving the right remuneration for the work they do. They are not trained sufficiently to gain skills in the open job market, and their self-assertiveness is reduced. We want to be in the open job market. Thank you.
Extremely well said, Getty, and I must say thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, sharing your candid responses, and of course, a part of your life history with all the listeners of Visions. So thanks. It really has been wonderful chatting with you, and I look forward to chatting with you in the near future again.
Thank you, Delia, for this opportunity. It's been a very inspiring time with you, reflecting and building on, and commitment that you need to keep. I started by saying I'm a low vision or a partially sighted person, but I lost my sight completely. And that even motivated me even more to fight stronger, faster, and harder. So then I beckon all to join us in the fight. And together we'll make a better world for all. Thank you. I look forward to another opportunity sometime to come. Remain blessed.
And you remain blessed as well. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yodley Wickham Ashby, and my honored guest.
Mrs. Gertrude Oforua Fefame from Ghana.
Indeed, it has been a pleasure. So remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website, and you can email me visionsbarbados@gmail.com. So until next week, love yourself and love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. So until then, ciao.